Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lawson.
At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
He is sacked. He is brought down by Kiko Alonso. And there's your ball game.
That's game time right there. That's game time right there.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
10-yard line, 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Leonis, my man!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football, right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. On the show tonight, T.J. Graham, Bills wide receiver, to talk about his T.J. Graham Skills Challenge coming to Orchard Park this Saturday. Ken Crippen of the Pro Football Researchers talks about his book, The Original Buffalo Bills, of the All-American Football Conference, and we'll talk about a new website that lets you put Ralph Wilson Stadium wherever you want in Western New York.
This place is pandemonium! Down to the one, into the end zone, touchdown, Fred Jackson! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
All right, Thursday night, welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Got a pretty good show planned. You heard the lineup. We're excited to do it. So thanks very much for tuning in tonight, and hope you get a chance to listen to some interesting interviews and maybe call in, participate in the show. We're always up for that. Phone lines are always open. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. You can reach out and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. And here we are, ready to go with a couple hour show. We should note, program note, we are not on the air tomorrow night. Sal Capaccio hosts the show tomorrow night, and we are not on the air Monday night, Memorial Day. So this is it for us. We start the Memorial Day weekend after the show tonight. So be ready for that. And then Tuesday, we're back on the air. And by next Tuesday, when we're back on the air, it's going to be the eve of OTAs. Big deal, right? Well, organized team activity can be a big deal. We're excited about that. So that's next week. That's after tonight. Tonight, 2 hours coming up. We're going to talk with T.J. Graham at the bottom of this hour, Bills wide receiver. We'll talk to him about this year's team, about all that competition at wide receiver that the Bills have. We'll also talk with him about the T.J. Graham Skills Challenge, which is coming right here to Orchard Park, to just outside the fieldhouse, or I guess it is going to be inside the fieldhouse, the Buffalo Bills fieldhouse, this Saturday. Registration at noon. It starts at 1. T.J. Graham will have all the details for us coming up at 7:30 tonight. 8 o'clock, Ken Crippen of the Pro Football Researchers Association. He's all over the place. He's written a book, The Original Buffalo Bills, a history of the All-American Football Conference Buffalo Bills, but he's also done a lot of other research, and we're going to talk to him about what the Pro Football Researchers Association does. You may recall Ken was on the show with us about a year ago when we talked about one of the PFRA initiatives, the Hall of Very Good. Not the Hall of Fame, but the Hall of the Very Good, which is a great idea. Those who don't make it to the Pro Football Hall of Fame go in the Hall of Very Good. We'll talk with him about that at 8 o'clock. At 8:30, this is a good idea. I don't know if you've seen this. Went viral today here in Western New York. Dan Gigani of 19 Ideas, a local boutique marketing agency, he and his group put together a website, an interactive website, 19ideas.com/stadium. Where would you put a new stadium for the Buffalo Bills? Basically, they've got a Google-type map of all over Western New York and a replica size of a stadium, and you get to drop it wherever you want. A little bit of urban planning for you, stadium planning. We'll talk with Dan Gigani coming up at 8:30 tonight about that idea, and I'm sure they've had an awful lot of response to that website already. So that's the lineup for tonight as far as interviews. We do have the phone lines open, and we want to throw this out. This was a topic that we discussed on the show a week or two ago because there's so much discussion about quarterbacks on the show. We just try to turn it in a little different direction, and so much discussion about E.J. Manuel. I think most of us accept the fact, embrace the fact, that E.J. Manuel is the key guy in the Buffalo Bills' 2014 season. They had a pretty good defense last year. They have tried to make it better by beefing up against the run with the new defensive strategy this year employed by Jim Schwartz. They have added offensive linemen. They drafted three of them. They signed Chris Williams. They have added, obviously, a big-time weapon in Sammy Watkins at the wide receiver spot. So they've tried to surround E.J. Manuel with good players on the defense and, in particular, on the offensive side of the ball. He is the key, though, in his second year after just 10 starts last year. Here's a question. I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on this. How would you know whether E.J. Manuel is having a good year? By what measure will you gauge his success in the 2014 season? The easy answer is wins. If they win 9, 10, 11 games, obviously EJ's probably going to be a big part of that, or at least a substantial part of that. But by what other measure is there? Quarterback rating, completion percentage, touchdowns to interceptions. How will you know rushing yardage? I mean, that's a component of EJ's game. How will you know that EJ Manuel is doing his part to bring the Buffalo Bills to the playoffs this coming season? What will you need to see? And is there any metric that can measure that? Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number to call. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. You can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. I've looked into this a little bit, quarterback rating. And for all of its faults, quarterback rating does fairly accurately measure how a quarterback's doing, because it takes everything into consideration. Heavily weighted towards completion percentage, touchdown to interceptions, average yards per attempt. That's a big part of it. EJ Manuel last year, quarterback rating 77.7. Not that good in the bottom half of the league. And last year, if you look at the AFC quarterback ratings, six of the top seven quarterbacks in the AFC found themselves at the quarterbacking a playoff team. In the AFC, six of the top seven were playoff quarterbacks. Peyton Manning, number one in the AFC, a 115 quarterback rating. Philip Rivers of San Diego, 105.5. Roethlisberger missed the playoffs. He was the third highest rated quarterback as far as quarterback rating points. Alex Smith of Kansas City was fourth. Andy Dalton of Cincinnati was fifth. Tom Brady was sixth. Andrew Luck was seventh. Six of the top seven quarterbacks in the AFC East last year, or looking at it another way, of the playoff teams, the six playoff teams in the AFC last year, six of them were among the top seven rated quarterbacks in the conference. So I think that indicates that quarterback rating is a pretty good metric. In the NFC, a little bit different, mostly because of Cam Newton. His quarterback rating was down at 88.8. But that's pretty good. In fact, it stacks up very well in the AFC. If he had that rating in the AFC, Cam Newton would be among the top, six quarterbacks in the conference. But even then, Cam Newton, six of the top 11 quarterbacks in the NFC passer rating were in the playoffs. Nick Foles of Philadelphia, Aaron Rodgers of Green Bay, Drew Brees of New Orleans, Russell Wilson at Seattle, Colin Kaepernick of San Francisco, and Cam Newton down of Carolina. McCown of Chicago and Romo of Dallas, two of the top six did not make the playoffs. But it's a pretty good metric, I think, quarterback rating points, to measure whether the quarterback is doing his job. And I think it would apply to EJ Manuel. So consider this. EJ's quarterback rating, 77.7. I think this is one way to look at it. Obviously, wins are important. But I think if EJ Manuel's quarterback rating at the end of the year is 88 or above, the Bills are probably going to be in the playoffs. Last year, Andrew Luck had an 87 quarterback rating point, and they were in the playoffs, obviously. Manuel's got weapons on offense. He's got a pretty good defense. 88 would make him the fifth or sixth highest rated quarterback in the AFC last year, just behind Dalton of Cincinnati. 88 in the NFC would put him down around Cam Newton territory. But I think if Manuel gets to a quarterback rating of 88 or better, Bills are in the playoffs. And again, that's sort of a looking at it backwards. But I think that's going to be a pretty good measure. EJ obviously will have ups and downs in the upcoming season. Some days will be better than others. But I think 88 is the quarterback rating point that you look at for EJ Manuel for the Bills to make the playoffs based on what we saw this past year. That's just one way to look at it. You may have another way. How are you going to measure whether E.J. Manuel is doing the job in this his critical second year? Critical for him, critical for the Buffalo Bills. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Phone lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What's the best way to measure this upcoming season whether E.J. Manuel is going to be successful or not? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. The phone lines are open right now. A couple of tweets already on this topic. Actually, a lot. People love talking about quarterbacks. Sabres, Bills, Mets tweets in, I like the ESPN quarterback rating. It's more accurate. It counts for rushing. Yeah, I've printed that out. I haven't been able to dive into it. Steve Nixon tweets in, everyone should be measured on wins, especially where this team is coming from. David Tillman, wins the only thing that matters. A tweet from NBA on True TV. By actual improvement, pocket awareness, accuracy, not turning it over or taking sacks. Yep. Amy Gusick tweets in wins. Louis Galbo tweets in playoffs. Circle the Wagons tweet, wins, always wins, nothing else matters, period. Jimmy Callahan wins. How do you get W's? Hand the ball to Spiller, and then EJ's job gets so much better. Good point. Brian Greer, has to be wins. Who cares about how it gets gone as long as the end result is the W? Lori Chase tweets in, staying upright for more than 10 games this season. Interesting. Charlie Oswald tweet, if EJ can show good consistency, that should lead to wins and stay healthy. Tim Miller, W's. Bills for life. EJ needs to run the offense efficiently and keep turnovers to a minimum. Team is good enough to win at least 10 games. King does, get on the field and put up good numbers like Warren Moon, and the Bills got a dynasty. John McCarthy, taking care of the football, limited the turnovers and managing the offense. EJ actually wasn't bad when it came to turnovers last year. He really wasn't. What did he have, 9 interceptions against 11 touchdowns? EJ wasn't bad in terms of percent of interceptions. You would argue, and I would, that he needs to air it out. He may need to have more interceptions this year, because that will indicate that he's trying to fire it downfield a little bit. Be Our Guest tweets in, beat New England. That's pretty simple. Mike Costa, you play to win the game. Oh, original. It's all about the W's. Chris Jardim, the one measurable, playoffs, just make it. A lot of people are all over the place. Wins, obviously, is what everybody wants to say, but there's got to be a measure, right? Here's a tweet. Dan Massey, wins, clutch playing, staying healthy, the most important aspects EJ needs to be a success with the Bills. I think clutch play, he's got that. I mean, based on what we saw last year, when you saw the comeback win against Carolina, when you saw him putting his team in position to come back and win the Atlanta game up in Toronto, it seems like EJ's got that gene, that comeback gene. But let us know what you think. Give us a call. 803-0550 is the number. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Lines are open. EJ Manuel, Bills quarterback. What is going to be the measure of success for him this coming year? Wins, obviously. But think beyond that. How do you measure success for a quarterback? Somebody said limiting interceptions. Somebody might say average yards per attempt. I maintain that in this case, quarterback rating means something. And if he gets to 88 or better in quarterback rating points, then the Bills probably have a really good shot to be in the playoffs based on what went down in the AFC last year. EJ Manuel, how will you measure his success in the upcoming season? Phones are open. 803-0550 is the number to call. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. Ken Krause tweets, I like quarterback rating because it's not always the quarterback's fault when teams lose. He's smart with the ball but too conservative, but let's win. I agree. He is smart with the ball. He doesn't take a lot of risks. He was too conservative, whether it was him or the direction he was given last year. He's too conservative, I think, in deciding whether to run the ball out of the read option attack the Bills had last year. I think EJ needs to turn it loose. I've said that a lot on the show over the last several months now. Needs to turn it loose in every respect when it comes to leadership, when it comes to dealing with the media, when it comes to dealing with his teammates, his play on the field. I think he has to have a better command of the offense in his second year in this offense, but he needs to show it this year. He is the key. And how would you measure EJ Manuel's progress this year? 803-0550, the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. We'll take a call from Tony on a cell. Hi, Tony. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, John. Thanks, Michael. Yeah, sure. I'm with you. I think quarterback rating is going to tell a lot. I have a little higher expectation, though. I'd like to see him up in the 100.
Yeah.
Because just with the weaponry that he's going to have around him, there's pretty much not any reason why he shouldn't.
There are only 7 quarterbacks in the NFL who had a quarterback rating of 100. So that would put him among the top quarter, the top 25%.
I understand that, but you've got C.J. Spiller. We've got a tremendous receiving core now. We've got pass-catching tight ends. If the guy gets any kind of protection and he's anything that he leads up to the billing that he was supposed to be, he should be there. All the pieces are in place for him to really succeed. It's going to be – I'll tell you what, it's fun, isn't it? Because I think we're going to have a real team this year.
I agree. I can't wait till things get going, Tony. Thanks very much for your call. Even looking forward to OTAs next week, next Wednesday, because then at least they start doing stuff on the field that looks like football. Not a lot. No contact, obviously. No pads, obviously. No hitting at all. But there'll be offensive sets and defenses up against those offensive sets, and there'll be one-on-one battles going on. We saw a little bit of that in the rookie minicamp over the weekend. And we'll begin to see, I believe, starting next Wednesday, what EJ looks like in this second year and how he throws the ball and the decisions he makes, which are huge for him. We're talking about EJ Manuel. How would you measure his success in the upcoming season? Give us a call, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Kurt in Lancaster. Hello, Kurt. You're on the air.
Concerning EJ Manuel, I think we got speed at the receiver position. I think we got a big stud at receiver now, obviously, through Watkins. Probably has the most talented receiving corps in the whole NFL. I think if E.J. throws 3,800 yards, I think we start off with the pass and throw in the running game. I'll just listen to your comments.
Yeah, all right. Yards, you know what, though? I'm going to disagree, Kurt, because throwing for a lot of yardage typically indicates that the quarterback is playing from behind and putting it up too much. I'm looking here at the guys who had more than 3,800 yards last year. They include Eli Manning of the Giants, who was the lowest rated quarterback in the NFL last year. I'm looking at Palmer out in Arizona and Matt Ryan in Atlanta. Romo, Brees had 5,000 yards, some ridiculous total. I don't know that 3,800 yards is a good measure. Tannehill had 3,900 yards. Do you want his season last year? I don't think you do. Roethlisberger had 4,200 yards. I don't know that yardage totals in and of themselves are a good indicator of whether or not a quarterback's having success, because you will rack up that yardage when you're trying to play from behind, trying to catch up, I think. A call here from Paul in South Buffalo. Hi, Paul. What do you think?
Hey, Dan. What's going on, man? Pertaining to the last thing, I think we need to have, obviously, a balanced offer. Our run game needs to show some production. Like, CJ Stone needs to produce, or EJ Manuel produce. Those statistics need to be up. Third down conversions are huge. That's being overlooked by everybody else. Time on third down conversions. And also fourth quarter scoring and time of possession in the fourth quarter is huge. We tend to lack them at the end of the thing. I'll just turn it over and listen to what you have to say, man. Right?
Okay, yeah, those are interesting. Some interesting thoughts there. Third downs are huge. Big plays on third down, usually indicative of a team that's staying on the field and running up time of possession and having some success. So I might agree with you on third downs. Fourth quarter, I don't know. I don't know about fourth quarter because, again, a lot of times you're playing catch-up in the fourth quarter if you're not a good team. I'm not sure if I'd agree with that, but I would agree with the third down conversion attempts. Buffalo fan tweets in, EJ will be fine if the surrounding cast does their part. Defense is under greater pressure because of the offensive scheme. I think he's referring to the no-huddle attack. Jason Wheelock, passing yards and touchdown. I prefer ESPN's quarterback rating. Bills for life. EJ needs to be better than Geno and Tannehill. No question he does. No question he does. Dave, I need to see EJ improve on his accuracy, especially those deep sideline passes. Everybody's got that first Jets game in the back of their mind. Chris Meehan tweets in, W's the only thing that matters. Wins and touchdowns, tweets Matthew Hector. Accuracy, that's definitely an area of improvement for EJ Manuel. I'm sure that's something that the Bills are looking for. Dramatic improvement, completed 59% of his passes last year, which, is a little on the low side, actually. You'd like to see it up in the low to mid-60s, and that would dramatically improve his quarterback rating as well, that kind of a completion percentage. But that's just one measure. You don't want him to be in the low to mid-60s if he's just throwing underneath coverage and hitting the checkoff man over and over and over again. Discussion about E.J. Manuel. How would you measure his success in the upcoming season? Wins, obviously. But what would be a good indicator of EJ making the kind of step forward that most of us expect and hope that he has? 803-0550 is the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. A couple of news notes from the Bills and the NFL today, and this was previewed last night on our show by John Crick, the fine sports writer who covers the NFL for the Toronto Sun. Today he wrote it. Former Sabres owner Tom Golisano plans to bid on the Buffalo Bills once the team goes on sale. That was confirmed by a source familiar with Golisano's intentions, writes John Crick. The Bills, of course, yesterday announced the hiring of an investment bank and law firm to facilitate the sale. Golisano reportedly, according to John Crick, not only will bid, but will seek immediate NFL pre-approval. I think pre-approval is going to be critical in this. The NFL wants to vet these potential owners before it even gets to a vote. They want to make sure that if they get to a vote, that it goes through without any controversy. According to John Crick's report in the Toronto Sun, Golisano might bid alone or he might bid in partnership with one other deep-pocketed Western New York businessman, but Golisano would be the lead bidder. Some pretty good reporting by John Crick of the Toronto Sun on that. A couple of former Buffalo Bills are going to be inducted into the National Football Foundation College Football Hall of Fame this December. Shane Conlon, linebacker, Frewsburg, New York native, Chautauqua County native, and defensive back Leonard Smith. Shane Conlon and Leonard Smith going into the College Football Hall of Fame this year. Conlon, of course, from Frewsburg, led Penn State to a perfect 12-0 national championship season. He's the 17th Nittany Lion to be honored by the College Football Hall of Fame. Shane was the eighth overall selection of the Bills in 1987, three-time Pro Bowl performer, played in three straight Super Bowls with the Bills, named to the team's 50th anniversary team. Leonard Smith, who played at McNeese State, All-American during his standout career for McNeese State. He was the first-round pick of the Cardinals in 1983 and then traded to the Buffalo Bills, played nine seasons with Arizona and Buffalo, and he helped lead the Bills to a couple of those Super Bowls. They will be honored at the College Football Hall of Fame. Former Bills defensive back Leonard Smith, former Bills linebacker Shane Conlon. From New York, from the Jets camp, Michael Vick says the New York Jets starting quarterback job belongs to Geno Smith. Michael Vick, who has been a starter in the league, says it'd be difficult to win the position this preseason because he doesn't really view it as an open competition. He said it's not the same as he had in Philadelphia last season when it began as an even competition between himself and Nick Foles. Also from the Jets camp, they do not expect Chris Johnson, the running back they acquired from Tennessee, to work at all during their OTAs next week. Johnson says his surgically repaired knee feels good, but he will probably sit out organized team activities. Chris Johnson suffered a meniscus tear week three last season with Tennessee, played through it, but he finished with a career low 3.9 yards per carry. 12 new officials hired by the National Football League today, including some with local ties. A Canisius College graduate, Rich Martinez, is one of the 12 new officials hired today. Also hired today is a familiar name, Brad Freeman. He is a field judge, the son of back judge Steve Freeman, the longtime safety for the Buffalo Bills. Ed Hockley, you know him with the biceps. His son was one of the 12 new officials today, Sean Hockley. And a couple of promotions, Craig Wolstad and Ronald Torbert were promoted to referee. The NFL announced that Scott Green has retired and Ron Winter has retired. So the NFL officiating lineup is set. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be in studio with Bills receiver T.J. Graham. We'll talk with him about these organized team activities coming up and the voluntary offseason conditioning program. But most of all, we'll talk with T.J. Graham about his skills challenge coming here to the stadium this weekend. We will resume the discussion about E.J. Manuel as well, so stick around for that. You can phone in now and wait on hold if you'd like, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. E.J. Manuel, how will you measure his success next season? Phone in and let us know. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO tonight, live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Bills have been here for a couple of weeks for voluntary offseason conditioning, but there's a pretty good program coming up this Saturday at the Buffalo Bills Fieldhouse here in Orchard Park. It's the third year of the T.J. Graham Skills Challenge. It is put together by Bill's third-year wide receiver, T.J. Graham, and he joins us in studio. Thanks, T.J. Thanks for coming by.
Oh, thank you for having me.
We have talked about this a couple of years in a row, and here it is, the third year of the T.J. Graham Skills Challenge this Saturday in the Bills Fieldhouse. For those who don't know about this program, tell us what it is and how it works.
All right, well, it's a skills challenge. So you come and compete in your positions. And it's a team format, so you come as a team of eight, one per position. You have your quarterback, running back, wide receiver, offensive line, defensive line, linebacker, safety, and corner. And you come out as a team. You compete individually in different challenges. Your points are accumulated at the end, and an overall team champion is crowned the T.J. Graham Skills Challenge.
What? Give us an idea of what the position group challenges are.
Well, I'll do the quarterback challenge since it's going to be a little altered this camp. So it's a long ball challenge this year. You have throwing at numerous targets. Some are moving across the field. Some are stationary. In Raleigh, we had a dunk tank because it was outside. So the coach of that team got in the dunk tank. And if the quarterback, you know, hit the target, he got three balls at the target from a longer distance. The coach went in. But for the coach's good sportsmanship, you know, we awarded him with a prize. So there's a lot of fun. You know, prizes and things to be won. It's free. I mean, I love free. Like I was saying earlier, yeah. I love free when I was growing up. So
sure.
It's time for you to come out and compete with your teammates and peers against other schools and win a bunch of free stuff.
So. It's for high school age players, right?
High school age. And I also allow, like, upper middle school kids to come, you know, because they're going to be the foundation of the high school one day. So, you know, in the future, I would like them to come along and pass along the word. And help me out and make this build to be a bigger thing.
What kind of skills challenges do you have, say, for the linemen, offensive and defensive
linemen? So we call it the king of the trenches. So this time they'd be tugging and pulling against each other. Call it four-way tug-of-war for this one.
Wow. So each position group gets a different set of challenges. There's a cumulative score. It's an eight-man team.
Eight-man team. And there are also team challenges, too. So you'll compete as a team against other schools also. I can't give that one away. And okay. It's more of supposed to be a surprise when you show up to figure out what to do. But it's a way for you to come out and, I guess, work on your skills, your football playing skills without doing the basic, I guess, like, routes and drills that you do every day with your coaches in high school. So
typically what happens, like a group of eight from Frontier High School will say, let's get together and do this?
Yep, a group of eight or even two groups of eight from Frontier High School will come out, and they'll name themselves like the Frontier Bullies or something. They'll come out, and I'll just yell out the bullies. They'll come up. They'll compete against we did it at Will South. Let's say the Will South team. So they'll compete against them, and, you know, we'll see how that goes. And at the end, you know, we have bragging rights for a whole year.
And this year, as you said, you've been at Williamsville South. This year, you're in the Bills Fieldhouse here. So you have climate control. That's going to be a good
thing. See, that was the key thing, because having it in different locations, going from Raleigh up north to Buffalo, you know, you can't really do the same things. Last year, we had wind problems with some of the stuff that was set up. So completely eliminate that this year with the Fieldhouse. And the conditions are going to be perfect. You know, we're going to open the doors if it's a nice day outside. But other than that, you know, won't be any rain. Climate will be perfect.
This is big time. I see the trailer parked outside the Fieldhouse here. Did you drive that up here from Carolina, by the way?
We did drive it up here. We drove it up here. The trailer has all the tricks, the gadgets, and the torture devices in it for the kids, you know. So it has all the good stuff. And, you know, it's a good way to advertise. And, you know, basically we pull up to the location, pull everything out. Have a lot of fun, put it back in on next stop.
You have one in your hometown area of Raleigh, North Carolina. You do it here in Buffalo, and there's another one in Rochester coming up in a couple of weeks.
Another one in Rochester, June 7th at Webster Schrader High School. You know, it's cool that we get the branch out, because eventually I want to grow this thing to be a lot bigger, to have a lot more locations. And eventually those champions at each location will come together to a neutral site and compete against the best of the best. So this year we were dealing with going to Toronto, but, you know, the hassle of getting that large trailer across the border with the inventory and stuff is kind of a pain. So, but, you know, we'll see in the near future. We'll probably get to Toronto, make it international, and take the champions from Toronto, Rochester, Buffalo, Raleigh, possibly Charlotte, North Carolina, too, and Greensboro. And take them to one location and see who's the best.
TJ, where did you get the idea for this?
Well, the idea came from, I think of a lot of crazy things all the time, but it came from 3 years ago coming out of college. I wanted to compete in the College All-Star Skills Challenge. And my agent said, you know, maybe I shouldn't do it because I could get hurt before the draft and the combine and stuff. So I was kind of bummed about it. So I didn't have very much sleep that night. And then I got to thinking, like, how many thousands or, I guess, millions of kids never get the chance to even say no to a skills challenge that they see on TV, but they have always wanted to do it. So this is my time to make it a friendly, competitive way for a lot of people to come out and have that chance to compete in a skills challenge type event.
It's free.
Free. Get free T-shirt, free food, and then might walk on some big prizes. So.
Yeah, and let me ask, this is going to sound like a cynical question, but tell me why you do this. Why do you want to do this? You're not making money on it, obviously.
No, zero money for me. More of, it's my way of giving back. But I do know that growing up, going to camps, and the stuff that I learned, or the experiences, or even the friendships that I built from those camps were the best things that had ever happened to me. So, you know, I looked up to those guys when I was growing up that I did camps, so it's my turn to give back to people looking up to me.
It's the TJ Graham Skills Challenge. It's this Saturday here at the Bills Fieldhouse. Registration starts at 12 noon. There's no pre-registration, or can you do that online?
I keep it simple. So go to tjgrahamskillschallenge.com, and the first page that you come to is a registration link. So the registration link is at the bottom is for the participants, and at the top would be volunteer registration. So if you just want to come out and volunteer and help out with this, and, you know, I guess do something good for the community, you can volunteer at the top link. And below that, if you want to register your team of eight, you can do that also. So,
and you can just show up at noon on Saturday if you want to.
Show up noon on Saturday. You could bring everybody you want to. Make a team of eight. And if you come individually too, usually what we do is we put together a team of eight for you so you can compete later on in the team challenges. But other than that, individuals are welcome to come out. It's a good time. So you get to compete. You can compete in all the challenges that you want to. If you want to, if you're a little wide receiver that wants to compete against the offensive lineman, you can go
God
ahead.
Bless you. Go ahead.
You can jump in there if you want to. Yeah. But if you're a receiver and a defensive back, you're more than welcome to participate in both the drills.
The TJ Graham Skills Challenge. We'll talk more about that in a minute. TJ Graham in studio with us on the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. it strikes me, this is your third year you've done this, and you're going into your third year with the Buffalo Bills, and when you look around the wide receivers room, you're probably the most senior member there. I mean, Mike Williams has more experience, but you've been in with the Buffalo Bills longer than anybody else in that room,
yeah,
I think. Right?
I'm growing gray hair soon. That's what it should be. But no, not really. No, we're very young room, very fresh, and it's good that we're fresh, we're very green, that we can all grow together and learn things. You know, when people are older, they get stuck in their ways, and it's a lot hard to break those habits. So right now, we're a lot of fresh, open-minded guys that are trying to be on the same page. And it's great that, you know, we've all come together. We're very, I guess, we're good friends in that room. Like, we talk to each other all the time. It's not very many, I guess, relationship problems that happen in that room. You know, we hang out all the time. So it's a really good thing that we're very young. We're very close in age.
And do you find yourself assuming any kind of a leadership role because you have been here longer than most of the others there?
Well, we all have our niches in the room. So yeah. We go at each other for different things. You know, in the room, I would say I would be like the more knowledgeable one for like random facts. So they come to me to ask me that type of stuff, more advice. But we have other guys in the room that know the playbook very well. We have guys in the room that run very well. We have guys in the room that run very good routes, catch the ball, or know what to wear out. You know, what's a cool new game or a cool new shoe. So knowledge is spread out across the room, and we spread it amongst each other.
You talk about the variety of guys in there, and it's a variety of kind of receiving styles, too. You kind of hit on that a moment ago. You've got speedy guys. You've got big guys. You've got Sammy Watkins is kind of in the middle of all of that. But there's a good mix of people in that room right now.
We're probably one of the best low-key, under-the-radar receiving corps right now. You know, adding Sammy made us over the top even better. So we're just trying to get that chance to come on Sunday and show everybody how good we are because in the room right now and on paper, we are a heck of a bunch to deal with. So,
what do you think of Sammy? You've seen him around here for a week or so. What do you think?
Well, you know, we played against him in college, too.
That's
so,
right.
Going against him in college, you know, I got to watch him there, and, you know, he's a good player. So it was great for us to add him to our team. And, you know, the more chances the more confidence that we have with EJ to throw the ball in the air, be the more balls that all of us at receivers will get. So receivers are supposed to be selfish. We're supposed to want the ball, demand the ball. And so we're going to run good routes. We're going to get open. We're going to block like crazy so we can get the running backs going too. And, you know, addition of Sammy is going to be great for us to get the ball in the air.
Do you buy into that? Receivers are supposed to be selfish. Do you think that's part of what you need to be?
Well, you kind of have to be because you're way on the outside. And when you're away from the ball, the best team players on the field are the offensive linemen, the guys that never touch the ball. And for a receiver, the guys on the outside, you got to kind of get lost in your own zone sometimes being by yourself. So you got to kind of be one-track mind and be like, if I'm going to run this route as hard as I can, you know, and not get the ball, you know, I should do that every time in the respect for yourself or forever to the team, you know. So, but being selfish is an all right thing because it's going to make you want to, I guess, produce on the field.
You look at the talent in that room, TJ, and you think about how you were a third-round pick a couple of years ago, a couple of premium round picks last year at the receiver spot, a second and a third, and then this year a first rounder. There's been an influx of young talent at that position since in the time that you've been here with the Bills.
Yeah, clearly we need to rebuild our receiving core, and through the draft we have done so. And, you know, it's that time that we've come together now. We went from third to second to first now with picks, and now, you know, we can feel the core of our receiving core coming together to blossom, you know, with our second-year quarterback. So,
What do you think of Stevie being absent from the room? What will you guys miss from him?
Veteran leadership. You know, like you were saying earlier that, you know, I'm basically one of the oldest guys in the room, and I'm considering myself very old. You know, Stevie brought a lot of, you know, knowledge to the game, a different, like, different view of everything. You could tell that he's very different. So if we see something one way, he'll look at it a different way, and we'd, you know, we'd give a mix of feelings, and, you know, we'll get it right. And it was good to have him in the room to, I guess, kind of iron out things to keep us young guys going in the right direction.
For you, in your third year, this will be the third different position coach you've had, from Bob Bicknell under Chan Gailey's regime to Ike Hilliard last year, now to Rob Moore. Have things changed that much from year to year to year for you?
Oh, yeah. These are three different coaches. But I think it's very good for the guys, basically me, to have the three different coaches to kind of, you know, have three different philosophies at the same position doing basically almost the same routes. And, you know, not every guy that we has a coach philosophy worked every single time for everything. But having three different coaches, you can kind of have the option to pick and choose which things are effective and input them into your game. So,
do you see? I know you've just had a few, you know, voluntary workouts a little bit with EJ Manuel. Do you see a difference at all in EJ from last year to this?
Oh yeah, his leadership skills are great. You know, this year he's coming out telling us what to do, pushing us everywhere. You know, last year he was learning the offense just as well, just like we were. So it was kind of hard for him to kind of initiate that leadership role. But this year, you know, he's got a whole year on his belt, and you know, EJ's like, all right, come on, guys. You know, he's in the huddle. If guys don't know what to do, he's telling them what to do. Or if he's on the field, even if the play comes out and we know what to do, he's telling everyone on the field. I mean, I want to exaggerate, but he's probably telling the linemen who to block and what not to do too. So, you know, he's gotten the playbook, and he's been looking like a savvy vet out there right now. So,
well, this Saturday, T.J. Graham will be in the leadership role for the T.J. Graham Skills Challenge this Saturday at the Bills Fieldhouse. It is free for high school age football players. Registration at 12 noon, and they can go to the website to get a jump start on that, right?
Website, tjgrahamskillschallenge.com.
And June 7th at Webster Schrader High School.
Schrader High School in Rochester.
That's great. That's great. What a great idea. How come no one's ever thought of doing this before?
You know what? I don't know yet. I hope no one steals it from me. Unless, if someone has any a lot of money they want to help sponsor us with, it'd be great, you know, because this thing could grow to be the biggest thing ever. Because I really don't tell this idea, but I'll spill the beans now. I eventually want to have it more of a regional challenge. Regionals, be Northeast, South, West, Northwest, Midwest, everywhere. And eventually bring us all together to compete against, you know, like the best teams in the T.J. Graham Skills Challenge or whatever skills challenge it could be. So
I could see something like that being televised even on ESPN, can't you?
Yeah, I could see that. I see it all the time.
Yeah.
I have big dreams.
T.J., thanks.
Yep, thank you.
T.J. Graham, Bills wide receiver, the T.J. Graham Skills Challenge, Saturday, Bills Fieldhouse, 12 noon registration. You can register online at tjgrahamskillschallenge.com. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to T.J. Graham for joining us. The T.J. Graham Skills Challenge this Saturday right here at the Bills Fieldhouse. You can check it out at tjgrahamskillschallenge.com. Call here from John in Buffalo. Hi, John. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call. Listen, I got to tell you, you've been doing some dynamite interviews. You know, it's so refreshing to hear a guy like T.J. Graham talk about what he's doing for kids and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's well-spoken, and he's a cool – I've never heard him speak before. He's just a cool guy. You get that impression.
Yeah, smart guy.
As opposed to certain unnamed people that are down south and they're getting caught with drug paraphernalia, and that's soon to be decided. Suspended stuff like that. I don't get it. But moving to my next question, the other night, I think it was two nights ago, maybe three, Clyde, I don't know his last name, the draftee.
We had Caleb Holly on, who was he was the guy from Alaska, the wide receiver from Alaska?
No. This is a defensive player. Huh. Bills drafted. I think he was the second draft pick.
Cyrus Quanjo is with us Monday
Cyrus,
night. Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Another well-spoken young man.
Absolutely. Now, would that be the guy that's like 6'5", and he looks real mean, but he isn't, apparently.
No,
it's a terrific,
interview. He's a really good interview. He's a big guy. He's 6'6", 322 pounds, really a good guy, very well-spoken. I thought an interesting story to tell about being born in Cameroon and growing up in the Washington, D.C. era. We actually talked after the interview the other night for a while about his native country, about Cameroon, and about the kind of stuff that's going on over there. So, yeah, he's a really good guy. Here is Kevin in Erie, Pennsylvania. Kevin, welcome. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Okay.
That's good. I was just calling to talk about EJ. I believe one of the things, I think the most important thing would be his accuracy, because I feel like if that, you know, that improves, the one that's going to improve his completion percentage as well as the touchdowns. So I'd say that's probably the most important area for him to improve in. I think if he does that, we'll be in great shape this season.
Yeah, I agree with you, Kevin. Accuracy is big for EJ, both and as I said, I'm repeating myself, as I said earlier, accuracy is big, and I think his approach offensively. He's got to get in attack mode, fire it downfield, give it a shot downfield, see what he can get from time to time. Maybe they got to take the wraps off him a little bit, take the chains off him. He's got to, you know, I just think he's got to cut it loose a little bit, and I look forward to that happening. There's got to be a comfort level. Everybody said this. EJ said it. Got to be a big comfort level in his second year in the system now, and having gone through an offseason where he worked on what he wanted to work on and didn't have to fly all over the country doing draft interviews. So I think it's going to work out for him. I look forward to it. We talked about that at the top of the show. What measure will you use to see whether EJ Manuel's doing a good job? The obvious measure is wins. I mean, everybody gets that. But I do think there are some metrics in place there, too. Brian Johnston tweeted in, "Are you stupid?" Meaning me. Wins, of course. Nothing else matters. Well, I've been called stupid before, Brian, but glad to see you've learned how to use Twitter. Am I stupid? No, we're throwing it out there for discussion. Yeah, I don't know the answer to the question. That's the great thing about Twitter. Everybody's a wise guy. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to a real wise guy, a guy who has written the book about the All-American Football Conference Buffalo Bills. He is a pro football historian and researcher. Ken Crippen joins us when we return. One more hour to go, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's got Goodwin open in the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! Flash Goodwin!
I like that kind of party, baby!
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop CJ Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it? The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
This crowd is absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the show here until 9 o'clock tonight. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk about this website, 19ideas.com. Have you seen what they did? I think it just went up today or maybe recently. We'll talk with the partner and digital director for 19 Ideas, Dan Giganti, who has this website where you can basically plop down the next Bills stadium, a world-class stadium for the Bills, anywhere you want in Western New York. It's pretty cool. Interactive website. We'll talk with Dan Giganti coming up at 8:30. We spent a lot of time on the show looking ahead, obviously this time of the year during the offseason, looking ahead to the future of the Bills, the upcoming season, make our forecasts and predictions about what might happen. There's a whole group of guys, men and women, who spend their time looking at the history of pro football. It is the Pro Football Researchers Association. They say they're dedicated to the history of pro football, made up of historians and writers. They've been at it for more than three decades. On the line with us, the former executive director of the Pro Football Researchers. He's a historian himself. He's the author of the original Buffalo Bills, too. Ken Crippen joins us for a return appearance on the show. Hi, Ken. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you for having me, John.
Last time we had you on, it was just about a year ago, we talked about what I thought was a novel idea your group put together, the Hall of Very Good, as opposed to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We had fun talking about that last year. Can you explain, for folks who may not have heard it, what that was all about?
Well, the Hall of Very Good is basically our way of trying to honor players who have had excellent careers but are not in the Hall of Fame. So basically right after I had talked to you last year, we had inducted our class of 2013, and within that class there are actually three people with Buffalo connections, Cookie Gilchrist, Daryl LaMonica, and Lamar Parrish. So Buffalo's been receiving a lot of notoriety through the Hall of Very Good. We've actually had Swede Youngstrom and Jack Kemp inducted in there, as well as Tom Sestak and Lou Saban.
Who decides who gets in the Hall of Very Good, Ken?
It's essentially our membership. So it starts off with our members nominating players. It goes to a committee of nine people who basically take it and whittle it down to the top 20. And then after that, it goes out to our membership to vote on the final class for the Hall of Very Good.
So Lamar Parrish, Cookie Gilchrist, Daryl LaMonica went in last year. Is there a class of 2014 coming up?
We're in the process of doing that right now. We're accepting nominations from our members. And probably within the next couple of weeks, we'll be whittling that down to the top 20 and then sending that out for votes to our membership.
Do you notify the gentlemen who are elected to the Hall of Very Good, and what kind of response do you get?
Overall, it's been pretty positive, yes. I've basically been going through our list of inductees and contacting all the players. And like I said, they have been very receptive. I did talk to Daryl LaMonica last year after he was inducted, and he was pretty happy about his induction. He was pretty excited about it.
Yeah, it's an honor, right? I mean, a guy like Daryl LaMonica, who maybe got some consideration for enshrinement in Canton, has got to think, what the heck? This isn't it's better than the proverbial sharp stick in the eye, I guess, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, when you have a group of historians that are basically saying that you've had an excellent career and it's worthy of recognition, it means something to them.
Has anybody ever been in the Hall of Very Good who subsequently was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
Actually, we've had 10 people who were nominated into the Hall of Very Good who are now in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, wow. And they're not immediately removed from the Hall of Very Good, are they?
No, we just put an asterisk next to them saying that they've now been inducted into the Hall of Fame, but we still keep honoring them in the Hall of Very Good.
Neat. We're on the line with Ken Crippen, pro football historian. He's the former executive director of the Pro Football Researchers Association. Hey, Ken, tell us what your group does. Give us a refresher course on that.
Well, like you said, we started back in 1979, and basically we want to try to educate people on the history of the game. So we've been publishing a magazine consistently since 1979, and we basically talk about all aspects of the game, whether it's biographies of players, talking about games, talking about teams, or just talking about rival leagues like the All-America Football Conference or the AFL.
And do your members have to do research? Do you encourage them to do research, or who gets to belong to the association?
Basically, anybody can be a member of the organization. You don't have to be a researcher. You don't have to have written anything. Basically, anybody who loves football can be a member.
You have an official magazine called The Coffin Corner. Talk about that and what sort of articles are published in that, how often that magazine publishes.
We publish that magazine 6 times a year, and basically, as I was saying before, it covers all aspects. So each issue is probably going to have a biography, maybe talk about a team, maybe talk about specific players or specific leagues or something like that, and we try to cover different eras, too, so may have something from more recent times as well as something from, say, the 1920s.
And is there any sort of, like, historical standard that the people who write these articles are called upon to meet? I mean, are we talking about, like, scholarly, is this a scholarly journal? Are these, like, is there all kinds of citations and everything they have to put in these articles?
It depends. I mean, sometimes they can put in those citations if they want it to be that type of article, but you really don't have to do that. It does go through an editorial board, so we try to make sure that it does meet certain standards and that the facts are correct. But beyond that, we pretty much want to open it up to anyone who wants to try to write.
I saw a description of one of the items that's going to be in, I believe, the next Coffin Corner about the Bills Wall of Fame tribute that was held here at Ralph Wilson Stadium last fall. What's that all about, Ken?
It's actually a photo essay that we have from the ceremonies last year. So we have pictures throughout the magazine that are basically covering the Wall of Fame ceremonies from last year.
Oh, neat.
That issue is out right now.
This sounded interesting to me, an article that I read about. I didn't read it, but Belichick and Bernie in Cleveland, Bernie Kosar and Bill Belichick getting his coaching career started. That sounds like it would be a pretty good read.
Oh, it definitely is a good read, and I highly suggest anyone who wants to read that to join the organization, and you can get a copy of that article. We also have it on our website for people who are members, so it was definitely an interesting article.
And, Ken, I read where your group meets a couple of weeks away, June 6th and 7th, right down the road in Cleveland. What do you do at these meetings?
We hold them every 2 years, and it's basically a way for all of our members to get together, but also we open it up to the public, so anybody who wants to come in and kind of see what we're all about and to meet us and talk to us, it gives you that opportunity to do that. So this year it's being hosted by the Cleveland Browns. So we're all trying to honor the 1964 championship team as well as their 1954 championship team. So we've got some players showing up, Bob Game, Jim Houston, and Dick Schaffrath are all going to be there from the 64 team. We also have Dave Robinson, who was just inducted in the Hall of Fame. He's going to be coming out and speaking to us as well, and we have some other authors and historians that are going to be speaking to the group, as well as having tours of both their training facilities and the stadium.
Before we wrap this interview up, I want to get info from you on that event, maybe info on the website, but I also want to talk to you about your book, which is just a couple of years old now. We're with Ken Crippen, a pro football historian, and he wrote a book, The Original Buffalo Bills, A History of the All-America Football Conference Team, 1946 through 1949. Most of us are aware that there was pro football in Buffalo in 46 through 49, but I didn't know till I went through your book, Ken, that there was pro football in Buffalo way back before that, in sort of the dark, shadowy period of the origins of professional football in this country. Buffalo played a part in that, huh?
That is correct. There were semi-pro teams back into the 1910s, and then Buffalo and actually Rochester as well were part of the NFL when it started up in the 1920s. And then there were a couple of minor league teams in 1940 and 1941 and some rival AFL teams. But, yeah, Buffalo definitely has had a presence throughout pro football history, including the history of the NFL.
Tell me about the All-America Football Conference, how the league got started and how Buffalo wound up being in that league.
Well, people were looking at the NFL and saying that they needed some other competition. There were other leagues that weren't as powerful, but when the AAFC came together, it was definitely the strongest rival that the NFL had in a long time. And Buffalo is one of the teams that had tried to get into the NFL but were rebuffed by them. So when Arch Ward, who was a sports editor out of Chicago, saw both Buffalo, Los Angeles, and actually San Francisco as well, saw them not getting franchises, they immediately tried to suck them into the All-America Football Conference. And that's kind of how the All-America Football Conference got started, with those three teams, and then they expanded out to eight when they started in 1946.
And what do you know? I've heard the name Jim Brewer. What do you know about him and his role as the owner of the Buffalo Bills of the All-American Football Conference?
Well, he was actually the owner of Frontier Oil Company.
Okay.
And so when he got in there, he was working with Sam Cordovano, who was the president of Globe Construction Company. Both of them have Buffalo presences. The two of them got together and were able to get this franchise, and so they definitely wanted to have a team within Buffalo because they were Buffalo people. And so when the AAFC came along, they were able to get that franchise and then put Buffalo back on the football map.
Initially, the team was called the Bisons, not the Bills, right?
That's correct. In 1946, there were Bisons, and then they changed their name to the Bills in 1947.
What was that all about? Do you know? Why did they change?
It was basically because they were competing against the baseball team.
Okay.
So they thought people were going to get a little confused if they had both teams of the same name. So they decided to change their name. They actually held a contest and came up with Buffalo Bills for 1947.
Ken, I want to ask you, I want to throw a couple of names at you of guys who played a role in that franchise, the All-American Football Conference Bills. And I've heard these names. I don't know much about them, but let's see if you can help me out here. Chet Mutrin, what was his deal? Why was he so special in the old Buffalo Bills?
He was one of the best halfbacks within the league, and he would actually, his numbers would compare against any NFL person as well. But he was the leading rusher for a while, and basically he and Marion Motley were probably the best backs within the league at the time.
You list him as 5'9", 179, even accounting for the difference, you know, in the game then and now. Was he small for the time, even in 1946, 47?
Yeah, he was still small at the time, and I think that's one of the reasons why he didn't last very long. He only played a couple of years into the NFL after the AAFC folded, so I think his size definitely played a big factor in that.
There's a famous name, both from sports and politics here in Buffalo, a local guy, Al Dechterbrun. What can you tell us about his career with the Buffalo All-American Football Conference team?
He was definitely one of the great linemen with Buffalo. And, when you think of the franchise back then, I mean, the names that come up, like you said, Chet Mutrin, Al Dechterbrun, you had Al Baldwin, and then George Ratterman. So those are the four names that you really hear when you mention that franchise.
And that's the last one I was going to ask you about, George Ratterman, the quarterback. Tell us about him.
He was a character. I mean, he loved playing jokes on people. But, you know, even though he was a jokester off the field, I mean, he definitely was an excellent quarterback within the All-America Football Conference. And some people consider him up in, you know, some of the upper echelon of there. Not quite as good as someone like, say, an Otto Graham or Y.A. Tittle or anything like that. But, you know, he was on the second tier as far as the quality of quarterback play.
And Ratterman, post-football, went on to have a broadcast career and actually was a lawyer, AFL union lawyer, right?
Right, and then he was also a sheriff for a while, too.
Wow, interesting. We're with Ken Crippen. His book is The Original Buffalo Bills, about the All-America Football Conference Bills. Ken, what happened at the end, and how did this team not last and make the move with other teams to the NFL?
Well, they had multiple issues. One is Jim Brewer didn't want to be an owner anymore, so he sold off part of his interest to the Cleveland Browns and retired. So there really wasn't an owner in place. There was a citizens committee that tried to get the Bills into the NFL, but the fact that they didn't have one person speaking for them, I think, worked against them. But the main thing is that the commissioner, Bert Bell, at the time, he promised that he would create a schedule that had Buffalo on the schedule against the rest of the NFL teams. and he did not produce that schedule when it came time to vote. And so as a result, the other owner said, well, I don't see Buffalo on the schedule, so I'm not going to vote for them to come into the league.
Was the fix in?
Some people say it may have been, because, you know, Bert Bell did promise a lot, but he never really delivered on it.
Yeah.
But there really was an overriding impression that Buffalo couldn't really sustain itself financially. I mean, you saw the teams in the 1920s and even in the early 1940s, 40 and 41, where they failed to meet or basically be able to stay financially afloat. And even the Bills of the 40s, they weren't able to do it as well. Jim Brewer kept talking about how he was losing money with the team. So I think all of that put together is the reason why the Bills never made it into the NFL.
Was the team supported? I mean, it was all, there was no TV, right? Back then it was all gate receipts, right?
It was all gate receipts, and they were probably in the middle of the pack as far as the All-America Football Conference in attendance. So they definitely had support, and even when the Citizens Committee tried to put it together a team, they had lots of support. They were actually selling stock shares, and a lot of people were buying that. So they definitely had the support, but it just, for some reason, they just couldn't make it financially.
And who did go from the All-American Football Conference? Who did make it into the NFL?
Yeah, the Cleveland Browns, the Baltimore Colts, and the San Francisco 49ers. Now, the Baltimore Colts are not the same Colts that you have now, but the 49ers and Browns are the same teams.
Huh. What do you think would have happened, Ken, had the All-American Football Conference Bills gone into the NFL back then, what, 1948, 49? I mean, how do you think history would have been different for this franchise, maybe even this town?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that they still would have been around, so you would have had a continuation from the 1940s. So I definitely think they would have been successful.
You know, and the preface to your book, you talk about, I thought it was a really interesting point, that were it not for the All-American Football Conference Buffalo Bills, you write, it's possible Buffalo would not have been suggested to Ralph Wilson, and this team that's here now and has been here for 50 or more years might not even be here. They kind of laid the groundwork for the success of professional football here, huh?
Actually, yeah, that's true. That when Ralph Wilson couldn't get into Miami, he was looking for places to go, and Buffalo was definitely mentioned, and that's because of the support that they had from the fans in Buffalo. So that definitely drew Ralph Wilson to Buffalo to take a look at everything and finally settle here.
What was your favorite part about writing this book, Ken?
I would say it's probably interviewing all the players. I was able to interview all the surviving members of the team, and just hearing their stories and everything that they had to say was just a wonderful experience.
You mentioned how those players felt like they had a real connection with the community back then, huh?
Absolutely, yeah. They definitely felt like they were part of the community. They felt like they were welcomed, and that they weren't outsiders coming in to play football, that they were actually members of the community.
Yeah, well, a different age, obviously. We're with Ken Cripp, and his book is The Original Buffalo Bills, A History of the All-American Football Conference Team. That book is available still, I hope, right, Ken? Like Amazon.com, that sort of thing?
Yep, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any place that you would buy books, you can buy this book.
Let me take you back to the Pro Football Researchers and give us the information if anyone's interested in your organization or maybe even attending the biennial meeting in Cleveland in a couple of weeks. Where should they go? Is there a website they should look at, Ken?
Yeah, they can go to our website. It's profootballresearchers.org. And if you want more information on the meeting, along the right-hand side of the webpage, you'll see a link that takes you to the meeting on how you can attend. You do have to RSVP for that meeting. We have limited space, and that deadline is tomorrow. So if you are interested, you definitely have to get over there as soon as possible to say that you want to be at the meeting.
But anyone's welcome, right? You don't have to be a writer or a historian or anything like that, huh?
You don't have to be a member. You can just come in if you want just to find out more about the organization and to see what we do.
Hey, Ken, thanks. Always enjoy talking with you. I always learn a lot. Thank you for coming on with us tonight.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Ken Crippen, pro football historian. His book, The Original Buffalo Bills, A History of the All-America Football Conference Team, 1946 through 1949. He is a member and the former executive director of the Pro Football Researchers Association. They do have their biennial meeting June 6th and 7th in Cleveland. And as Ken says, if you need more information on that, you can go to profootballresearchers.org. Thanks to him for joining us. Talking a little bit about the Bills of the past and the Bills of the present and future, and we'll take your phone calls. We were talking about E.J. Manuel earlier on. Well, how would you measure success for E.J. this year? Give us a call, 803-0550, the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. A call here from Jonah in Cranberry Lake. Hello, Jonah. How are you?
How are you?
I'm great.
I was wondering, what player on the Bills this season do you think has the best chance to make the Pro Bowl this season?
Hmm. Who do you think, Jonah?
I think probably Kiko Alonso, because he got snubbed last year, I felt, and he's going to grow so much this year, hopefully, that I believe that he will make it.
Well, yeah, all right. I would put Kiko in there, yep. You know, last year you had Kyle Williams, Mario Williams, Marcel Darius, Jarris Bird, all going to the Pro Bowl. I wouldn't discount Aaron Williams, actually. I think he's a player on the rise in the league. The same for Stephon Gilmore, as a matter of fact, a player who, if he stays healthy all year, would definitely be a player on the rise. And just, we don't quite know what we have here with Sammy Watkins. I think most of us believe we have a very, very good and talented wide receiver. I think he would have a chance of being in the Pro Bowl as well, but that's an interesting question. Thanks for your call. Lines open if you have comments, questions about the Bills, about the Buffalo Bills of the All-American Football Conference, or about the Buffalo Bills of the NFL and this coming season. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. Hey, if you haven't checked it out, there's a pretty good pictorial piece on our website, buffalobills.com. 8 ways Ralph Wilson Stadium already looks different. It's really cool. There's 8 ways, a fresh coat of paint, the scoreboard, more scoreboards coming up, monumental stairs, concession stands, super gates, the front door. There's a lot going on here, and you might want to check this out. I know a lot of people are interested in that. What's the stadium look like? We've told you there are hundreds and hundreds of construction workers here on a daily basis now. They have been for several months and trying to put the new stadium together. Obviously, they're facing a pretty tight deadline with the first preseason game on Saturday, August 23rd. But if you want a kind of a look at what the stadium looks like, the renovation, you can go to our website, buffalobills.com, and check this out. Pictures, full-color pictures of some of the features of the refurbished Ralph Wilson Stadium. 8 ways Ralph Wilson Stadium already looks different. And we are still, June, July, 3 months away from that stadium being used for the first time, the new stadium. Almost exactly 3 months away, as I look at it, right? 3 months from tomorrow, first preseason game. Mike, I hope they're
yes.
ready.
Mike, yes, Adam, okay. I fell asleep over
No, that's all right. I hope they're ready in 3 months.
I hope so, too. It's coming along great.
It looks good, and the pictures really do show a lot when you look at it. It's pretty cool. 8 ways Ralph Wilson Stadium already looks different. Go to buffalobills.com to check that out. All right, what about the future stadium? Not this stadium, but the next stadium. If the Bills are going to stay, many people think there's a new stadium in the works. Where would you put that stadium? Well, how about if you look at a map and plop it down anywhere in Western New York? There's a local boutique marketing agency that has made it possible for you to do that on their website, 19 Ideas. They've got 19ideas.com/stadium. And we're going to talk with a partner and digital director for 19 Ideas, Dan Giganti, when we return about this incredible website. That's coming up next. It is the John Murphy Show. We're presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Covering a lot of territory, a lot of different territory tonight. Pro Football Research, the All-American Football Conference Bills, T.J. Graham with his deal coming up Saturday this week. And again, go to T.J. Graham, skillschallenge.com. He's got a skills challenge right here in the Bills Fieldhouse on Saturday, 12 noon registration, 1 o'clock. They get started there. And we're covering a little bit different territory here, too. This came across our desk this afternoon. It's a website put together by a Western New York boutique marketing agency called 19 Ideas. And on this interactive website, they ask the question, where would you put a new world-class stadium for your Buffalo Bills? And basically, with a couple of clicks, you can take what looks like Ralph Wilson Stadium and put it anywhere on the Western New York map, on a Google map of Western New York. It's pretty cool. On the line with us, the partner and digital director for 19 Ideas, Dan Giganti. Dan, thanks for coming on the air with us tonight.
Oh, thank you.
This is pretty cool. What's the plan here? What's the idea? Where did this come from?
It just started, actually. I had an idea. I'm a fan and interested in the new stadium talk and kind of wanted to see some places where it could go. I've had some ideas myself, like most Western New Yorkers. And so being a web developer, I kind of threw this together for myself at first, just so I could place the stadium and see where it could go.
What you've done. Yeah, tell people what you've done and what it looks like, because it's hard to describe on the radio, I think.
Sure. Well, it's built on Google Maps, so it starts with the background of the website is Google Maps. You can move that around, zoom in and out. What I've done is allowed you to place Ralph Wilson Stadium anywhere on the map and then drag and move it around. I also created Heinz Field for kind of it's a newer stadium. It's a little smaller than Ralph Wilson, and it might be more accurate to what a new stadium for us might be size-wise. And I also grabbed Lucas Oil Field from Indianapolis because it's a retractable roof.
Oh, all right. Yeah, I see that. Heinz Field and Lucas. I thought maybe you would place Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, but you're talking about Heinz Field and Lucas Oil, what they would look like on the Buffalo map.
Yeah, just to get a sense, because Ralph Wilson, the footprint is pretty big.
Right.
And the new stadium probably won't be as big. And so if you're trying to place it in a spot to be a more accurate representation of what the new stadium would be, is you could use one of those other ones. I kind of at first did it for myself, showed it to some people, and they had a lot of fun with it. So we decided to open it up for anyone to take a few minutes and place the stadium where they think it should go and write a few sentences about why. And then we have a listing of everyone's submission, and you can share it. So we thought it'd be neat for make it easy to share that on Facebook and Twitter to let other people know where you think it should go.
When did you launch this, Dan? When did you put this up?
We just launched it today. I actually had the idea, like I said, when I first did it myself was a couple months ago. And then in the recent weeks, there's been a lot of chatter, you know, as I'm sure you know, and I've heard you talking about it on your show. It's everyone's talking about it. So I really started to say, I need to finish this up and put it out there. So for the last couple of weeks, I've been working just on, you know, putting the finishing touches on it. And today we felt like it was ready to launch it.
So you launched it today. What sort of response have you had so far today?
It's been great. We've had, you know, close to maybe, I think, 70, 75 submissions. That's just in the last, I'd say, 6 hours or so. And it's been really fun for me because I've looked at pretty much all of them as they come in to see where people think it should go. Some people are having fun with it. We've had someone put it, like, on the Peace Bridge, which obviously isn't, an accurate or, possible. One person put it in moved. And this was actually hard to do because you have to drag all the way. They put it in L.A. A couple people did it in Toronto, which I'm not personally happy to see. But there's been a lot of great ideas in the Western New York area, and it's been fun to read their descriptions of why.
There's no shortage of opinions about this, which I think is a good thing. I mean, I think people in Buffalo are eager and excited about the possibility of a new stadium, and everybody wants to talk about where it should go. People kind of fancy themselves as urban planners, I think, sometimes, Dan. What do you think?
I think you hit the nail on the head. It's funny, a friend of mine actually said I should allow other people to place other things. It's an armchair urban planner that thinks they know where everything should go. And so I might do that later, you know, maybe allow you to drop a Trader Joe's here or because people have ideas on where everything should go. But really, that's what was kind of neat with this is it's to see it. You kind of need to see it. And with Google Maps, it's so accurate in terms of the satellite imagery they have. And so what I did, too, is the stadiums that I have cut out, they zoom in and out so they're, you know, relative to the size of the map that you're looking at. And so it's relatively accurate in terms of the footprint that it is and where it can go. So
I see what you mean about people having fun with it. Some of the comments, somebody submitted, you know, somebody put the stadium out on Lake Erie and said, let's put it out on the lake because the team's going under anyway. Wise guy. Typical internet wise guy.
Exactly. Well, and I know, I listen to GR all the time, and Mike and the Bulldog have been talking a lot about Bill's Island.
Yeah.
There was definitely, I think, one or two people submitted that idea. So it has been a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to see, the other submissions that come in. And then, like I said, sharing option, we just wanted to help contribute to that conversation that's going on.
Do you think this is made to be taken seriously, Dan?
A lot of people are taking it really seriously with their submissions. Some people, like I said, are having fun. And I think that it's just, it allows everyone that has that idea of where it should go to see it, to place it, and then write why they think so. And, you know, I don't know if any what will come out of it. I'm sure it's not going to contribute to the actual location of the stadium, but it is kind of interesting to see what the public opinion is.
Yeah. I mean, they've got this group coming around, I would think, very shortly to survey some of these sites. Why not take a look at what public opinion is? I mean, who knows the setup better than the people who actually live here, right?
Yeah, no, exactly.
Hey, Dan, the footprint, as you said, for Ralph Wilson Stadium looks large, and you also have built in the size of parking lots. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I mostly did that, too, because the lot that I chose, it's the main lot from, you know, out in Orchard Park there. It's huge, and I think sometimes you don't realize how big it is, and partly why I did that is because a lot of the spots that I've played with, there isn't a spot for that parking lot.
Uh-huh.
And so part of it is just to kind of show that. Same thing, like I have the field house, which most likely, especially if it's in a downtown location, won't be so close to it just because there won't be the space available. But it's been fun to kind of see, like I said, the size of things. And think about it, too, that lot that I have on the site is just one of many lots. So it does kind of show you just the entire footprint that the whole stadium, you know, not just the stadium itself, but everything around it takes.
Yeah, I got a favorite. Someone suggested this to me, and I like it, Dan, and let me run it by you. And actually, yeah. I'm going to do it on your website. Downtown Buffalo, west side, right by the Niagara section of the off-ramp to the Niagara section of the thruway, I think Waterfront School. I think that proximity to downtown with that kind of transportation access, listen to me, I sound like the urban planner now. I think that's the place for it. What do you think?
Yeah, you know what? I heard someone suggest that recently, too, and it was while I was working on the app, so I went ahead and placed it myself, and it's become a favorite spot of mine, too. In fact, one of the submissions in the last hour was someone that I don't know that did that as well, and so I liked it.
Does it fit there? Does it fit there with lots and everything?
Yeah, I think it definitely fits there, not the lot size that, you know, the lot that I have that is the lot from Ralph Wilson, it'll have to be reconfigured.
Right.
And that's one thing, I'll just say it now because a lot of people have suggested it. I wish it was easier. I would have allowed people to rotate the stadiums.
Right.
But it's kind of just a limitation of Google Maps that it's not easy to do that. So in some cases, you kind of have to use your imagination of, you know, how it might actually fit inside the locale you're looking at.
Yeah. Dan Gigani is our guest. He's partner digital director for 19 Ideas, Western New York boutique marketing agency. They've got this 19ideas.com/stadium. Where would you put a new world-class stadium for the Buffalo Bills? Where do you see this going, Dan? I mean, what other applications could you have for this sort of thing?
Yeah, like I said, I mean, this is stuff that we do all the time. I've been developing websites for 20 years. So, you know, like my friend that suggested it, I could see something like this with the map maybe allowing you to, it's almost like a Sim City, right, where you can drop in other things.
Yeah.
These people that have lots of grand ideas for what should go where. Really, like I said, it's fun, but it's also sometimes informative because you might think that something could go, oh, I think they should put it here. And then, as I've done with this tool, find out, you know, because honestly, there aren't a lot of open spots right now downtown for the stadium. Actually, one submission that's been popular, and it's something I thought of too, is where the new River Bend site is going. And I think that would have been perfect. And as you can see with the tool, the stadium does fit there nicely, but the state already has plans for that area.
Yeah. What other kind of work do you guys do? Anything similar to this, Dan?
A lot of marketing communications for companies, like, you know, PR communications, and then some website development. We have a few sites that we're working on for some clients that will be launching soon. I'm not sure if I can name them, but but keep an eye out for it. Like I said, I've been doing it for a long time. My partner, who's actually also my girlfriend, specializes in PR. She heads that up for our company.
Well, it's pretty fun, and I want to direct people to it. It's 19ideas.com/stadium, and just you can play with it, right? You can go and have fun with it, Dan.
Yeah, and you can submit more than one if you have a couple different ideas. I've seen people that have definitely done that, and like I said, it's been fun working on it, and I can't wait to see where everyone thinks it should go.
More than one, like a stadium on every corner. No, that wouldn't work.
Yeah.
No.
Well, we'll say on the Navy Island, it is really big. I never really noticed it. I've fit all three stadiums on there.
Okay. Hey, Dan, thanks. Great work. Thank you for coming on the air with us tonight to talk about it.
Thank you.
Okay, Dan Giganti, who is partner, digital director for 19 Ideas, a boutique marketing agency here in Western New York. Where would you put a new stadium for the Buffalo Bills? Well, you can do it yourself. You can go to this website and do it yourself. It's 1919ideas.com/stadium. 1919ideas.com/stadium. Check it out. Thanks to Dan Giganti for joining us tonight to talk about it. Take a break. Come back. We do have time for a few more phone calls. We return. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Dan Giganti, who just was on the air with us. And again, if you want to look at that website, it's pretty fun. 19ideas.com/stadium. 19ideas.com/stadium. Where would you put a new stadium for the Buffalo Bills? People talk about that all the time. Well, you can look for yourself using Google Maps and this website created by 19ideas.com. A couple of minutes left here in the show. Let's take a call from Bob in Erie, Pennsylvania. Hello, Bob. You're on the air.
And I was in the car while I was listening to you and the fellow that was writing the article on the old AAFC with Bills.
Yes.
And it brought back memories because I remember so many of those players. I saw all of their games in 1946.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, I still have five of the programs because I gave one of the programs to Lou Saban, and he was playing for the Browns at the time.
Wow. Cool.
Do you happen to have a contact for him that I might give him a call or an email?
Yeah. I'm trying to think what his email is. I don't have it here. Can you email me here, and I'll do that for you, Bob? My email is john.murphy@bills.nfl.net.
John.Murphy.
@bills.nfl.net.
@bills.nfl.net.
Yes. Yep. Email me here, and I'll pass it along to him. Okay.
Just so happens now my nephew is senior vice president of the Bills.
Who's that?
So whatever goes around comes around.
Yeah, who's that? Who is that? Who's your nephew?
Jim Overdorf.
Oh, of course. Yes, Jimmy O. Yes. All right. Well, he knows how to get in touch with me.
Well, I will especially I'll every email 2 weeks, you and appreciate if you get back to me then.
Okay, thanks
Thank
a lot.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Bob. Let's go to Corey. Corey is on the air with us. Hi, Corey. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I was hoping you could rank each team in the AFC East by their running back core.
Okay, I could try that. I will tell you this. We had this discussion on the show probably a month or so ago. Whenever the Jets signed Chris Johnson, that was a discussion point on the show. But I'll give a crack at it. But then you got to do it too, Corey. You got to let me know what you think, okay?
Sure.
Well, let me just talk about it for a second. I like the Bills rushing attack the best of all four with CJ and Fred Jackson and, of course, the additions they've made. So I like, Bryce Brown and even Dixon. I like the Bills number one. Number two, I mean, Chris Johnson is such a question mark as to his recovery, but I guess I'd put them number two on the thought that Chris Johnson might be, fully recovered or at least a semblance of what he was before. They have Chris Ivory and Bilal Powell down there at the Jets. I would put the Dolphins number three with Moreno now and Lamar Miller and Daniel Thomas, and I'd put the Patriots, Ridley, and mostly Ridley, I'd put them at four. What about you? Who else, Michael?
Shane Vereen.
Yeah, Shane Vereen. Is he still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, yeah. Okay, how would you rank him, Corey?
I can't really argue because the Bills, I think that while the Jets have Ivory and Bilal Powell, I think the Bills' backs complement each other a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And the Patriots' running backs seem to fumble a lot more. And the Dolphins, all they really have is no Sean Moreno.
Yeah. They've got some good moments out of Thigpen last year, and Lamar Miller has had some moments. But, no, I like the Bills best of the backs. And we kind of, as I said, we had this discussion when Chris Johnson was signed by the Jets. I mean, he's the wild card here. If he's healthy, not last year Chris Johnson, but the prior years before that, then, they could be the best of them all in the AFC East because he's that good. He's that dynamic. But I think right now the Bills probably have the edge when it comes to the best running attack in the AFC East. That'll play out, obviously, as we move forward, no question about that. Well, we want to, excuse me, remind you of the schedule coming up with no show tomorrow night. Sal Capaccio actually will host the show tomorrow night. Monday, Memorial Day, no show. We've got NBA basketball on our flagship here in Buffalo, and we're back on the air on Tuesday night with a pretty good show already planned for Tuesday, including Fred Jackson and Mark Kelso. We're going to talk about some contracts with a number of other people, so that's coming up next Tuesday night, the next night that we're here on the air. But you can tune in to Sal Capaccio tomorrow night. He'll be in this time slot hosting the show. Make sure you tune into him and interact with him. Have a great Memorial Day weekend, everybody. Thanks very much for tuning in. We want to thank our guests tonight, including T.J. Graham. Don't forget about the T.J. Graham Skills Challenge coming right here to the Buffalo Bills Fieldhouse this Saturday. Registration starts at noon. You need an 8-person team to do it, high school age. It sounds like a pretty good deal. It's free, by the way, and they start at 1 o'clock on Saturday. If you need more information on that, you can go to tjgrahamskillschallenge.com for more info on that. Thanks to Ken Crippen of the Pro Football Researchers Organization. If you need more information from him, you can go to profootballresearchers.org. And, of course, Dan Giganti and 19ideas.com/stadium. A lot of website stuff going on tonight. Thanks to our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned and locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer tonight, Pete Karchus. Our producer is Mike Adamek. And the Bills director of broadcasting is Jeff Matthews. Have a great holiday weekend. We'll see you again on Tuesday with the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We'll be live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.